All right, well, let's get started, and if people straggle in, they straggle in. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope everybody's, you know, enjoying Tech Ed so far, even though it's just getting started. My name is Alan Hurt, and for the next 75 minutes or so, I'm going to be talking to you about how to deploy SQL Server 2012 using Windows Server Core. All my contact information will be at the end of the deck. So why would you consider Server Core for SQL Server 2012? Arguably, one of the biggest reasons is that it's more secure. So those of you that are unfamiliar with Windows Server Core, it's basically a stripped-down version of Windows, doesn't have a GUI. We'll talk about the situation in Windows Server 2012 and how that changes a little bit in this talk. But basically, there's no GUI. It's, for the most part, command line. And that means you won't have to deal with things like IE, so people going on your boxes. It'll be less intrusion, and people won't feel the need to maybe do stupid stuff on your servers. Not saying that happens in your environment, but I've seen it at customers. Arguably, from my perspective, because I'm a high availability guy, is that you'll have arguably higher uptime. And the reason I say that is everybody in here has the need to patch their Windows servers, be it security, other updates that need to happen. So for the Microsoft updates, because you don't have that whole presentation layer and you don't have to patch things like IE, you're going to have much less to patch. So if you've got really short outage windows, be they weekly, quarterly, monthly, whatever they are in your environment, you'll see that it's a lot less to patch. I've got some statistics, and I'll show you those in a little bit. And you'll also notice in some KBs that it will specifically say that this KB doesn't deal with Windows Server Core. So as you evaluate things like patches, some of them may explicitly say this doesn't apply. Now, I want to put this in here because it may be true. However, from a general standpoint, you're not going to see a ton better performance because you have, say, less services running on Server Core. You may see a marginal potential increase in performance, but that would not be the reason that I would deploy Server Core. So if you think that you're going to go from a really slow box to a really fast box by just turning off a couple services, Server Core probably isn't, you're not going down the right path. The other two things, you're heading down the right path. Now, I've talked to a lot of customers over the past year or so once that SQL Server Denali, now SQL Server 2012, was announced, and you know things like Windows Server Core have been around for a while. And in talking to my customers about this, some of them use it now for file servers, but for the most part, none of my customers use Server Core. And there's a couple reasons for that, and I want to talk to those, and hopefully you can overcome some of the same barriers that I see at the customers I work with. The first thing that you get is, well, it's different. Well, not really. It is just Windows. Whether you're using Windows Server 2008 R2 with SP1 or you're using Windows Server 2012, it is still just Windows. You just don't have a UI generally to deal with. So in environments that are very used to GUI-based administration and haven't done command line or learned PowerShell or anything like that, it might be a slightly rougher transition, and we'll talk about that in a second. It's not a standard in your company. And that one actually makes more sense to me because I would do a show of hands, but I would assume it's most of you, that you have standard builds in your company for Windows. You may have a couple variations, but you have a standard build and it is X. Well, introducing something like Windows Server Core, even if it is the same version of Windows, would be another variation that you now need to account for. So I could see that being a very understandable barrier because that's actually work that you now have to spin up. But I honestly see that the pros of deploying on Server Core definitely outweigh a con like this. It's not that hard to get an image up, especially if you have most of the guts in your GUI-based image already. Because things like your drivers and stuff for your HBA cards won't change in Server Core. It's just, you know, you won't get the admin tools installed and viewable. The next one is arguably the biggest one, and I alluded to it earlier. It's a lack of administration skills, and quite frankly, the vibe I get from a lot of my customers is that they're scared. Because you know, they haven't taken the time. They've become so reliant on GUI-based administration tools. So now the thought of if they have to be on the box using command line or using PowerShell is kind of scary to them. Now, the flip side of that is, remember, it's Windows, so if you're using GUI tools, first of all, you shouldn't be on the box to be administering unless you're doing something directly on it. Secondly, you can use remote administration, so you can use all those GUI tools from afar. You don't need to use them on the box. So hopefully, you know, that would be an easier transition. But I would still say that you should have those skills in-house, because in the event of, let's say, a server down, you actually need to go on the box or something, you should have somebody who knows a lot of the command line stuff. The other one is, let's say you just want to switch. Well, in current Windows Server 2008, 2008 R2 type things, there's no direct upgrade path. This is a completely new install. So you couldn't say take your existing SQL Server, just change out the OS underneath and have it all work. That's not possible. So clearly, if you know, that would mean downtime, and that's something maybe you don't do for now, but maybe new deployments, or you find a way to work it in, but existing deployments, it would be a hard retrofit for. Oops. Thought I was running off my laptop. So Microsoft has published some numbers, and I think Andrew Mason may show a slide in his deck. I haven't actually looked at it. His session's linked at the end. He's doing one just purely on Windows Server Core, and not a SQL focus like I am. But I've heard anywhere from, you know, 25 to 80% savings in, you know, stuff on your box. So what I decided to do just about a month ago was I'm going to install Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 out of the box experience. Nothing fancy. I'm not going to really configure anything special. Then I'm going to do one that has a full OS with a GUI, one that has just core. Then I'm going to install SQL Server 2012, and we'll see what the results are in terms of when I want to go patch, what's the difference. Now, the only tweak I made was to enable .NET 3.5.1 so I could install SQL. That's it. I made no changes to the underlying OS whatsoever. So this is as close to an out-of-box experience as you would get. And what wound up being fortuitous for me is that was actually a patch Tuesday, so they released a bunch of patches, so I could actually see, you know, with a new workload, what would it look like? Well, some of it's actually pretty significant. Now, before I installed SQL, you'll see that basically the footprint in terms of disk size is about 1.5 times just base OS. That's because you're not getting into the presentation layer stuff. And it drops to about 1x when you install SQL, but it's still a significant difference. So for those of you who are have, say, chargeback, and you're being charged per megabyte or per gigabyte or whatever, if your OS is taking up a smaller footprint on your SAN or local storage, wherever this needs to be, even if it's VMs, you know, however you're doing your in your company, just by going server core, you may see a smaller overall disk footprint of installs. So again, this is real world. These aren't numbers I made up. These are actual installs. Now, the part that is really interesting, so again, I've heard varying numbers. When I installed the full OS, just for the ones that it wanted to install, there were 48 patches, 50 available, two are kind of, you know, on the bubble. If I did all of them, including the optional ones, it was a total of 74. However, on server core, you'll notice the difference. It's 37 and 51, which is just one more than the all that were available for the full OS. So basically, at the end of the day, there's pretty much a 45% savings in patching. That's pretty huge. Again, this is all out of box. You know, ran this on a Tuesday. Just use Windows Update to see what was available. I didn't do anything special. So for those of you, like I said, that have tight patching windows or want to be more secure or don't want to spend a lot of time patching your boxes, that right there is arguably your biggest savings. And again, if you've got tight SLAs, you know, that is going to make a difference. You know, especially if something, let's say, goes wrong. It's easier to rerun 25 less. So food for thought. Don't know why this isn't twice. Okay, so what's supported for server core right now? Right now, it's only Windows Server 2008 R2 with SP1. Now, obviously, if they release an SP2, that will be supported as well. I'm going to be showing you some demos on Windows Server 2012. However, it's not officially supported yet. I would say it's a very near 100% chance it will be by the time Windows Server 2012 RTMs. As far as other versions of SQL, there's been no announcement for anything but SQL Server 2012 to be supported on Server Core. Will Microsoft change that? I honestly don't know. I haven't heard anything, so stay tuned. But as of now, it would be for brand new SQL Server 2012 deployments. Has to be mentioned that it's 64-bit only, although I really haven't seen a 32-bit deployment of SQL Server in a long time, and quite frankly, if you're deploying Windows Server 2008 R2, you're getting a 64-bit OS. And it's all editions, all languages. There's no restrictions to just, you know, U.S. English. If you have Japanese or German or whatever your locale is, you can use Server Core. You can look at the link there. It's in the deck. I'm not going to go into this in detail, but not all the features and options that you can install with SQL Server are supported on Server Core. So make sure that your scenario is supported. For example, it's basically the engine with replication and full-text search, things like analysis services, the basic client tools, but not SSMS. So things like that. Now, this is basically what it looks like. You would choose Server Core if you haven't. For the DBAs in the room who generally don't do the install, this is what the screen looks like. And currently in Windows Server 2012 release candidate, this is what it would look like if you're trying to test it right now on Windows Server 2012. So I'm going to be demoing this first thing later. So earlier I said that Windows Server 2012 was a bit different. And that's because in Windows Server 2012, you have the ability to switch from pure Server Core, meaning no GUI at all, to a full OS, and that's fully supported. There's also this other scenario called MinShell, which is what I call a halfway house. And basically what it is it's Server Core, but allows you to run the MMC snap-in. So for example, Failover Cluster Manager. So for the way I'm looking at that is for those environments that want to sort of ease their way into Server Core, that's not a bad way to do it. Or if you install a full GUI OS of Windows Server 2012, you can eventually switch down to pure Server Core. So it's actually really advantageous. It gives you a lot of flexibility. This being able to switch is not available in Windows Server 2008 R2. The other thing about this as well, just from a clustering perspective, because I'm actually a clustering MVP, is that if you mix, say, full GUI and Server Core nodes, that's fully supported. Now, how SQL Server will support that is to be determined. If I had to think about how that might be done, it would be basically you would have to install the same way you would on Server Core, for example, no installation of SSMS. Because if you install the SSMS bits and you go to pure Server Core, that's not going to work, and it'll probably put you in an unsupported state. Again, nothing has been announced, but if I was thinking about those scenarios and trying this out, I would install under full GUI if I plan on serving the Switcher Core just like I would on a pure Server Core. On Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1, if you enable remote management, essentially you're going to also enable .NET 3.5.1, so you don't have an additional step there. I'll show you what sconfig is and all that stuff is in a little bit. Certain things are more difficult in Windows Server 2008 R2. For example, unbinding certain protocols. You need to, you can use NVSP bind to unbind, let's say, IPv6 from your iSCSI network if you're not using it. So, but there are standard ways with commandlets to do all that stuff in Windows Server 2012. In fact, I'll show you a sample of what I've been working through to get my standard scripts together, but there are a lot of things in Windows Server 2012 through command list I can basically do now in one line that I had to do multiple DOS-based commands in Windows Server 2008 R2. So let's talk about .NET Framework and Server Core for a moment. So one thing that you're going to have to do is enable .NET 3.5.1 in Windows Server 2012. That link there is to a blog I wrote back a few months ago when I discovered this, and this is going to go right now for every SQL Server installation, because by default, the payload for .NET 3.5.1 is not loaded in Windows Server 2012. Now, obviously, this becomes part of your standard build. This isn't a big deal, but from a DBA perspective, SQL Server will essentially try and install, and if it can't load it, basically, it's going to cause the installation to sort of fail at one point. And again, I have some other blog posts and links there that you can access to see how to do that. Now, let's talk about what in-band and out-of-band are here. So there are basically two .NET Framework versions that you have to worry about with SQL Server 2012, .NET 4.x and .NET 3.5.1, which is essentially a side-by-side with .NET 2. For both Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012, both versions .NET 3.5.1 is in-band for both. And what that means is it's released, and the OS came out after that was released, so when you patch it and you do everything, it's done through the operating system. However, with .NET 4.0, because it was released after Windows Server 2008 R2, it's considered out of band, which means it's a separate install, and if you have to patch it, you have to take care of patching it yourself. Whereas with Windows Server 2012, it ships with .NET 4.5. And it's considered in-band, so any patching of .NET would happen within the OS. So again, that's another something to keep in mind. So if you're installing on Windows Server 2008 R2, you're going to have to deal with .NET 4. Now, the recommendation right now is to install the patches, either 4.02 or 4.03 for .NET 4.0, because they contain some additional functionality and fixes for the always-on availability group stuff. So again, very strongly recommended that you guys look at that after you get your base SQL install done. To enable it, what you can do is either use DISM or PowerShell. And these here are the payloads. And quite frankly, there's, as you can see, it varies slightly depending on OS and your method. And that's why I put this here. So the syntax I have, again, in those blog links, but it's really understanding which packages to run that makes a lot of sense. And as you can see, it's much more standardized and easier in Windows Server 2012. They've sort of simplified the model. Now, with DISM especially, that tip applies. The roles and everything that you're going to load using DISM, if you're going to use that method, are pretty much case sensitive. So if you get errors, it's probably because you used a lowercase instead of an uppercase, or vice versa. Now, what's also kind of interesting is the way SQL Server 2012 setup behaves in Server Core command line versus doing it the GUI way. So if you are on, say, Windows Server 2008 R2, as I was when I took this screenshot, it's not going to install .NET 3.5.1 for me. It's going to say, you have to go do this thing before I can go on. However, same thing on Server Core, it's going to actually enable .NET 3.5.1 if you haven't done it already. So again, slight difference in behavior between a Server Core command line and GUI-based. Now, I talked about this a little bit earlier. You can mix, you know, full Server Core versus MinShell, you know, and that's a really good thing on Windows Server 2012. I'm going to demo some of that in a little bit. Now, what they've done in Windows Server 2012 as well, and I apologize for the red, but I can't ever get PowerShell to change that. That's its default stuff. I now tend to use the PowerShell command that's a little bit more in Windows Server 2012 than I do DISM, because basically it's much easier all in one working environment. And there's a brand new switch, I believe it's new in Windows Server 2012, which is basically you do install Windows feature, the feature name, and then dash include management tools, and it will install the right management tools based on the version of the OS. So if it's full GUI, it'll give you the GUI operating tools. If it's just server core, it'll enable like PowerShell, for example. So that's actually really nice. And that right there is just showing you that by default, and this is one of those things that you also need to understand, if you start with pure Windows Server Core, any of the GUI stuff, the payloads are not loaded. So if you're ever going to switch back to the full GUI OS, you have to load those payloads. So here, for example, I tried to enable the management features, which is Failover Cluster Manager. And it's basically telling me here, and again, you'll see it when you see you can download the deck, that feature isn't installed on the box. So pure server core when you install is pure server core. However, if you start with the full OS, you get everything. So again, it's something to keep in mind of how you think about deploying this. So how you do it here, again, Windows Server 2012 is easier. While there's a name difference between DISM and PowerShell, it's one thing, whereas on, for example, using Core, you basically have a two-step on Windows Server 2008 R2. One thing that you should be aware of is that hopefully you know by now, if you're a cluster person, that cluster.exe was deprecated as of Windows Server 2008 R2. And hopefully you're all switching to the PowerShell commandlets, hopefully. If not, start learning them. But in Windows Server 2012, while you can enable cluster.exe, it is not enabled by default. And I would, again, I have no knowledge, but I would say if they've gone this step, the next step is probably not even being there at all. So now's the time to really start making that transition. But if you're reliant and you have scripts reliant on cluster.exe, you can enable it in Windows Server 2012. Here's what you need to think about from an admin perspective and Windows Server Core and clusters. So there's another thing called Automation Server. Basically, it's not enabled by default and it's actually deprecated, but FileStream relies on it. So my recommendation to you is enable that. And again, those are the differences between DISM and PowerShell of how to enable it. But I recommend that you, if you're going to do Server Core, obviously enable the PowerShell commandlets, enable Automation Server, and it's up to you whether or not you enable cluster.exe. My recommendation would be not to and force yourself to learn the PowerShell commandlets. Because they've been around since Windows Server 2008, and quite frankly, I find them easier to use, much more intuitive. So just my recommendation. So here's fun. So not every data center has internet connectivity. Or when you're getting these things up, sometimes you don't have a local activation server. So how do you actually activate if you're in neither of these situations? So this is how you do it. So you enter the key using slmanager.vbs with the IPK switch. Then you actually get the installation ID. You can right-click on the little dialog box, open Notepad, copy that in there. Then call the phone number. My recommendation when you put it in Notepad, because it's in blocks of six, break up the text because it shows up as one string. Then you actually enter the code. And finally, you can see that it's activated. So again, this is not straightforward. So anybody looking to have completely offline servers that aren't connected to the internet and you have to activate them, this is what you're going to have to do. That was not a fun thing to figure out, let me tell you. The other thing there as well, you'll notice that I put this in here just mainly for reference. You're going to have to use the quiet or quiet simple parameters in your command line installs, whether they're in files or directly on the command line, and I'll show you examples of both. As you can see, if you want to cheat, you can enable that UI mode thing. It's kind of a hidden thing. You really don't want to go there. I mean, SQL Server installing via command line scripts has been around forever. This isn't rocket science stuff. The other thing that you're going to have to do as part of your install, which you wouldn't normally have to do on a GUI, is install the stuff from the feature pack. And it's a couple things. It's the SMO stuff, so basically you have all the underlying objects to do management. Then you have the PowerShell commandlets and basically SQL CMD, so that if you have to be on the box, you can actually do some stuff on there. And again, that's no different than, say, if you were in server down and you had to be on a box and all you had was SQL CMD. But these aren't enabled by default, so this right here shows you how to do it via command line. So again, you don't have to pop up any GUIs. So pretty much every little aspect of your installer can be automated via script. You may not have to ever see a GUI to do all this stuff. So in the end, this is what it looks like successfully. Before I get into demo land, I think this is about the last slide that I have. And first of all, if you're doing standalone instances and you're going to especially want to use always on, make sure that TCP enabled is set to 1. Now, a little word of caution on TCP enabled. There are some things in SQL Server setup that you can use true, you can use 1, you can use 0, and it's sort of interchangeable. Not here. TCP enabled is either a 1 or a 0. And it will actually stop, error out your install if you use true. So just let you know. And I'll show you examples of this as well. So how many people here are familiar with SQL Server 2008 and 2008 R2 slipstreaming process? So a handful of you. Basically, it was a manual process that you had to basically build your own installs from a service pack or a service pack plus CU. Well, with SQL Server 2012, all you have to do now is say update enabled equals true. And if you want it to not go out to the internet, which is my recommendation, download whatever patches that you want, stick them in a directory or a share somewhere that you can get to, say update source equals wherever that location is, and then it just works. And I'll show you an example of that. All right, so now let's get into demo land. All right, so on the surface here, I've got an instance of SQL Server. And just because it makes for sort of easier to see, this is clustered. Now, another thing that I want to show here that really is not part of this, but I want to show you another couple capabilities of SQL Server 2012. So first of all, my databases. Files are on an SMB share. So with clustering in SQL Server 2012, you can actually install to an SMB share and not actual drive letters. It's the only way to totally get around drive letters. So that's one thing. And the other thing that you can do with SQL Server 2012 is your tempdb for a clustered installation can be on a local drive. So for those of you, for example, that have performance issues with tempdb, don't want to put it on SAN because it's expensive, but you may want to get, or you have, say, Fusion IO drives, or want to get something like high speed internally, you can do that now. But, you know, again, this looks normal in SSMS. This is just SQL Server from a DBA perspective. Now, the other thing I want to show you here is, so I said that I actually have no shared storage, and I truly do mean that. This is what that instance actually looks like in Failover Cluster Manager. It looks a little weird, I know, but that's, so if you do SMB shares, that's what you're going to look like. However, if I now go switch to those servers, and this is actually Windows Server 2008 R2, I'm going to demo Windows Server 2012 in a moment. But I wanted to have examples of both just to show you what was possible. This is all you see. So this is server core on Windows Server 2008 R2. This is one of the nodes running that clustered instance. And again, from a DBA perspective and from a general overall admin standpoint, it looked no different on the other side. But clearly when you log on to the server, there's a vast difference. And this is, like I said, kind of what scares a lot of people is this. Now, there are some things built in. For example, I was talking about sconfig. So this is one of the things that Microsoft gives you built into the OS when you install Server Core. It doesn't do everything, but it does a lot of the more popular configuration options. So getting onto the domain, your IP addresses, things like that. For most everything else, you're going to have to do the commands and all that other kind of stuff. But they do give you something that's sort of graphic-like. There are other things out on CodePlex I've seen that, you know, you can bring up. Some of the GUIs. Now, for example, let me show you. Some of the GUIs do show up. Like, for example, date time will bring up this, but you can't run everything else. Now, if I exit out of here, you know, I'm just basically back to a command line. I can do PowerShell. So I could do, say, for example, get cluster. So getting used to Windows Server 2012 where it does this by default. So again, this is where the rubber meets the road, is if this scares you, you may not be a candidate right now, but I can tell you that going back and learning all this command line stuff isn't a bad idea, and getting back to scripting and automation in that way is a really good idea. Now let's look at Windows Server 2012. So here I have again, looks pretty much the same. Here's pure server core. That one's almost configured. I have one that isn't. We're going to walk through a configuration. And I have this one. Which is actually the full OS. Now, I said I was going to show you how to start switching between them. And I'm going to do that because that some of that takes a little bit of time, so what I'm going to actually do is run through some of those so that I'm configuring the one node and getting a cluster up and running. So you can switch between any of them, so full to min-shell to core to min-shell back up to full down to server core. Any sort of combination you want to go to, you can. So let's take the most extreme case. And now I'm going to do this. Now, removing just the essentially the GUI tools removes server core, or the full GUI, and you'll see in a second. All right. Now, while I'm doing that, let me start configuring this other computer here with server core, just to show you sort of what you would go through, you know, if you were to go do this. So again, all I have is a command prompt. I have nothing else. So let me just get my little script here. So the first thing I'm going to do, oops, did I roll those back? We'll find out. Mm-hmm. Where'd I go? It's probably when you have too many VMs. me just roll these back real quick. So hold on one second. May not have reset my demo completely. So let's take 2 seconds. All right. Let me just make sure I removed the one thing that I'm going to configure. All right. Now we should be fine. All right. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go configure that node that isn't configured. I've done some of the configuration to save some time because it does take a little bit of time. All right, now we should be good to go. So I've already done one of the networks, but now I'm just going to do the other ones. Oh, it's going to bark at me because I didn't start PowerShell. You get used to it just being in PowerShell, actually. There we go. That's what I wanted to say. Okay. Now, what I do is, because, for example, I don't want to have the private network on a cluster register in domain, you have to set it to not register in the domain. And then I can verify that setting. And a lot of these are new commands in Windows Server 2012. As you can see, these are a lot easier than, you know, NetSH interface. They're actually a lot more intuitive. Now what I can do is I can set the IP address for this thing. Now the one thing that you'll notice I'm going to point out here in a second is you notice that you can't enter like 255.255.255.0.0.0. You have to understand what the actual prefix stuff is now if you're going to use some of these commands. So just be aware of that. All right. We're going to rename this computer, and we're going to just force it to restart. Now I'm going to add it to the domain once it restarts. And again, because this is all scripted, you know, either you have a standard image or if you have these scripts, for the most part, you can have a standardized build even if you don't have a core image. You just have a script that runs through all this stuff like I'm showing you here. As I said, I'm not doing every little aspect of it because it would take up more time than we have. I gotta find a way to default to start in PowerShell. I'm sure there's a way. Then I'll reboot. Now the next command you'll see is I actually turn off all the firewalls. Just because in my demo environments I can do that. Now go by your corporate security policy standards here, you know. If you need to leave the Windows firewalls on, leave them on. You can do them individually, but one really nice thing in Windows Server 2012 is you can turn them all off at once with a single line of code. So it's really cool. So wait for this to come back. And then I want to get to the point where I'm actually installing SQL Server, and then we'll start showing you some of the switch stuff. Yeah. So as you can see here, my firewalls are off. Now for this, I just need to make sure I've mounted my Windows ISO, because again, this is where that rubber meets road thing that I was talking about, where the payload is not loaded by default for .NET 3.5.1 and SQL's install will fail. So you have to actually load it. I'm going to show you loading it via PowerShell. All right. Give that a second. There we go. Go back here. Now I'm going to, so this is exactly how you load it. Basically, you're forcing it. You're saying, hey, install this feature, but get it from another place. So when I mentioned earlier that if you start out at server, pure server core, and you have to enable the full GUI, you'll do something similar to this, where you'll basically point it at a location. Now, if you're internet connected, it may first go out and try and download it. But if you want to just control it and you have the media, you can do this. And this takes just, you know, a minute or two. There's sort of the standard PowerShell progress bar. And once this is done, we'll mount the SQL Server ISO and we'll actually get SQL Server installed. Now I'm going to show you, once this comes back, what I'm using to install in this case. Then I will go look at a couple of other files that I created and show you the differences. For example, the clustered instance versus this, which is a standalone, which I'm doing everything in one line, versus a standalone that I'm actually doing via a file. And it will bark at you if you put features in that it doesn't like. For example, on the full GUI, all right, let me just mount the SQL and we'll get that started and we'll go through the files. Actually, before I do that, so let me just show you here, font size 20. All right, so this is one option for SQL Server, where you can basically stick everything in a single line with all your switches. Not my preferred method, to be honest with you. You'll see how I do files in a moment. But the one thing that I will say about SQL Server and the way they've changed the install over the past couple versions that I really like. So for example, you'll see here I say, agent service password equals password 1. So if you're creating a file, which I'll show you in a second, you don't have to embed the password in the file. You can pass that parameter at runtime. So basically what you're doing is you'll see the example that I'll show you. But basically, you can make your file secure because you won't ever have to do that. And if, say, if you use DBAs or even if you're not DBAs or installing, your passwords will never exist outside of a runtime. Well, let's get this kicked off. Let me just make sure the ISO is mounted. All right. Now we go to here, files and VMs, installs, SQL Server, 2012, RTM. All right, the other thing that I want to point out here as well, and we'll watch it run for a second or two. I'm using update enabled equals true, and I have the update source set to a local folder. Now let me show you what that looks like. I've actually got the exe. This is the, when you click on the, you have to make sure though, when you download it from Microsoft, they give you an exe, but it's really a zip file. You have to make sure that you actually take it out of its container and you get this. Otherwise, it won't work. Just so you know. All right. Make sure. All right. So let me switch to D then. So C scripts.
PowerShell.
All right, we'll do it the easy way. We'll just force it. Now, one thing that I do is I use the dash Q slash Q or quiet and dash indicate progress equals true. Or you can just put, if you're doing it all command line, slash indicate progress. What you'll see is it'll be a whole lot of stuff scrolling by, but it's a nice visual cue that stuff is actually going on. So I'll wait till it starts scrolling in a second. And then I want to show you where it'll get to the point where it's doing the CU update or unpacking it. So yeah, I mean, this is basically what you see. For those of you that are familiar, when SQL Server generates a log file in your program files, Microsoft SQL Server, you know, directories for your installations, this is essentially what gets generated. It's just also being displayed to the window here. So as I said, I just wanted to get to the point where it's actually showing you that it's doing the update enabled stuff. Give me 1 second here. This thing is never as fast as you want it to be. So any questions so far? Okay. Then the install is actually, now granted I'm on an external SSD via USB 3, but this install takes about 10 minutes to do, which is pretty zippy, you know, and on real hardware with real SAN or something else, it could be potentially even faster. Now, the one thing I will tell you, just from my experience, if you're doing this on Windows Server 2008 R2, one of the slowest parts of the install is the .NET 4 part. So if you can do that ahead of time, it will greatly speed up your installs. So see, there you go. There's the bit where it's identified the hotfix, it sees what it is, it's going to unpack it and incorporate it into the install. So that's that update enabled equals true and me putting that file just in that. I didn't have to do anything special. Now, I haven't had to more patches to test, but the way it's supposed to work is basically as long as all the updates are related to each other, it should install them in the right order. That's the way it's supposed to work. All right. So now let's get back to some of that switch stuff. Okay. All right, so this time I'm actually going to do it the order I was originally going to do it in. Let's just go to min shell, which basically is server core, but I can use, say, the commandlets. So here, basically, I'm removing the shell, but I'm not removing the management tools. And then I have to reboot. Now, that's the one thing about switching between the shells. Now, I mean, it makes sense that you would have to reboot in between them, but just account for that if you're going to want to switch for that, so you're going to have to take an outage to do it. So I'm going to restart my computer. See how this is going? It's going. So a lot of this really honestly isn't that much different than you're doing now. It's just applying what you know in a very different way, you know, than you might be used to. So this is, there we go. So just a poll of hands, how many people here are using Server Core in their current environments for anything? So one, couple people, handful people. How many people here are DBAs? All right, so most of you. How many people here think they're going to convince their server admins to use Server Core? Well, about 50% of the people that, you know, raised their hands. That's still pretty good. Okay, so here again, what I've done is I've removed the main GUI, but I left it in MinShell. Now you notice it looks like Server Core, but wow, it popped up Server Manager, right? So I could, for example, do cluadmin.msc. Now I'm not logged in as a domain account, so it's going to bark at me in a second. But again, for me, this is what I call the halfway house. For some of your more popular Windows admin tools, you can get at them here. But now let's go from this to pure Server Core, where I wouldn't have this option. All right. So that'll take a moment. Let me see how our SQL install is doing. And then what I'm going to do after this, I'm going to enable all the feature pack things. And then I'm going to also enable the always on feature and show you how you can do that when you have Server Core boxes. Because the way always on availability groups feature works is it's not enabled by default. And you have to enable it on the service. But the servers themselves have to participating as a cluster node, as part of a cluster. I think maybe in the interest of time, I'll skip the feature pack stuff because that was in the slides, and I'll show you how to get the cluster up and running. So I'll speed that process along a little bit. So, still installing there. That's almost done. Now let me go here, and I'm going to start preparing this one for cluster stuff. Okay, now I can just verify that I added the administration account, and it's there. So, shut down -L. And I can now log in here. Now I can also, didn't want that. So remember I mentioned earlier about the admin tools? That's what this does. That's that dash include management tools thing. So I'm going to take care of this. This should be almost done, and this should be almost done. Getting there. All right. So now we're cooking. All right. So here, remember, I switched from full to MinShell, but I had Server Manager, but now all I have is this, and if I try and do load Cluster Manager, it's saying it can't find it. So again, I did this all standard built into the OS, fully supported. So again, you can start off in full OS and having everything, and eventually decide, you know what, I want to go to just be pure Server Core when I deploy Windows Server 2012. You can do that over time. So there's no immediate, we need to do it now or else, kind of like the decision you need to make when you cluster SQL Server at the beginning because it's a clustered instance of SQL Server. So that's a really nice little feature. So failover clustering is installed there. Hopefully this is almost done. Well, I think in the interest of time, since we have two nodes already at that are installed and ready to go for clustering, I'm going to run validation stuff. So if I do test cluster node Batman, actually, let me make this bigger so you can see it. This is the other problem of switching between shells and stuff, is that your settings don't always take. Now, the one nice thing, you've noticed that I haven't done any import module stuff in Windows Server 2012. It's because if the thing exists, by default, you'll need to worry about loading the modules. So now I could do this remotely and use Failover Cluster Manager and verify, but I'm actually going to do this through command line just to show you what it looks like. So again, the whole point is that you can do nearly everything you want to, from soup to nuts, here in command line or PowerShell. Now, this is one difference. For example, this is the cluster validation stuff. There is no cluster.exe equivalent for this. So again, another good reason for you to want to actually use PowerShell. Then what I'm going to do is create that cluster. And then we're going to I'll show you what enabling always on can look like. Well, let me actually show you something now while I'm at it, while these are loading. So you can technically do some of this remotely. Again, you can treat these like you would any other SQL server. So if you load up your computer management, and let's say I want to connect to Batman, you'll see that SQL Server Configuration Manager, because it's an MMC snap-in, is here, and I can see my services. Now, to my point that this isn't enabled by default, you'll see this always on high availability tab, and it says this node is not part of a failover cluster. So I need to create my cluster, which is what I'm about to do, and then I can enable this always on feature. So let me go back to that thing here. All right, so it says it's suitable. I normally would recommend looking at this report, but in the interest of time, we're not going to do that. So we're creating our cluster, and then we're going to enable the always-on feature. I'm going to do it. Oh, because I'm not. Yeah. So /L. That would be because I'm not logged in as a domain account, which is what I expected. So let me do it from here. So now it's creating my cluster. And then I'll go back to this other one when it's done. We'll refresh this. Should be almost up and running. And you'll see it's changed. I can do this remotely. I'm not going to do that for this particular one. I'm actually going to show you via the commandlet how to do it. But I also want to show you that this other one should have finished out still working, but okay. All right, so as you see, my cluster is up. I can now enable always on. There are really two ways I can do it. You can do it via the instance name and it's going to basically start and stop it. So I'm going to do it locally here. There's this commandlet that ships with SQL Server 2012. Again, one of the reasons you would want to enable that feature pack. So yeah, you want to restart it, and then it's going to stop agent. And you want to restart that. Now, the other way you can do it, you can do this all from one location as well, because it's essentially using SMO underneath the covers. So I'm going to enable that other instances over here using the SMO path. Now, again, my SQL Server agent is not going to be restarted. I would have to do that manually. But now I can see, for example, if I refresh here, it's enabled. And if I connect to Joker, I forced the restart, so agent is obviously stopped. I can start it here if I wanted to. But I will show you that it's now running, and I can configure an always-on availability group. And I did that from one location. Now hopefully this second note, and so this also completed as well. So in the past 75 minutes, I've basically taken you on a tour and just quickly highlighted everything that you can do with Server Core and SQL Server 2012. And as you see, there's quite a bit to it. But it really, in many ways, is no different than what you're doing now. It's just a different way of doing things. So my suggestion to you is start playing with Server Core, start playing with SQL Server 2012, and that's all I have for you. Thanks for coming out. Have a great session.